The landmark deal set to be agreed upon with the governments of Australia and Papua New Guinea on a new defence pact appears to be stalled. The pact would have seen both countries actively cooperating in military exercises, as well as the exchange of troops between the two nations. The pact will also see the two countries come to the aid of one another when faced with conflict. Anthony Albanese was upbeat about the prospect.
This is about advancing the sovereignty and security of both of our nations.
But now the PNG cabinet appears to be having second thoughts. Could there be foreign interference? Anthony Albanese downplayed the roadblock.
Australia is ready to go, but of course we have to go through our processes as well.
In light of 50 years of PNG independence, James Bale asked Ian Kemish of the School of Historical and Philosophical Inquiry at the University of Queensland and former High Commissioner to PNG about the new pact that would further strengthen the diplomatic ties between the two nations.
Well, it was the largest and most significant of Australia's overseas territories. At the time of independence, Papua New Guinea was a country of 2 to 3 million. It's something like 12 to 15 these days. And it was an integrated part of the Commonwealth of Australia, administered from Canberra.
In the past 50 years, what has been the biggest successes in Australia's diplomatic ties with the country?
I think there's one core thing to call out here, and that is that Australia has stayed the distance and remained by far Papua New Guinea's most significant partner. There's lots of talk about other countries. China gets mentioned a lot, but plenty of others as well. In the end, you put together all of the financial assistance that every other country or organisation in the world gives to Papua New Guinea, it makes about a tenth of what Australia provides.
Speaking upon the defence treaty, how is that significant in deterring the influences of outside powers?
Well, we're going to have to see what this agreement actually says. It's an interesting situation. We've seen quite a bit of reporting, including by the ABC. The narrative that we're seeing in the media is that it will involve a level of integration between our respective forces, and that there'll also be some commitments to support each other in times of conflict. From Australia's point of view, that's all very good. The last time war came close to our shores here in Australia in 1942, it came through the occupation of Papua New Guinea, which in the end is only 3.6 kilometres from the nearest Queensland island. It's very, very close. So in any imaginable scenario, it would be a no-brainer for us to come to the defence of Papua New Guinea if it was under attack from a significant ex-regional power.
When it does come to the sharing of military personnel and troops between the two nations, what will be some of the biggest implications that could happen?
Interoperability is really important. I think that building on the personal links that already have existed for decades now between the Papua New Guinea Defence Force and the ADF will be important. Papua New Guinea has struggled, given its budget and its organisational arrangements, to maintain its military to a level that government and people in Papua New Guinea are satisfied with. One of the things that will have to be managed is that it won't see reduction in personnel and capacity on the PNGDF side in favour of the Australian side. Bougainville is an interesting one. When the Bougainville War in the 1990s, the biggest conflict in the Pacific since the Second World War and saw thousands of people killed, was a civil war in Papua New Guinea between separatists on the island of Bougainville and the government of Papua New Guinea. We were, through those years, maintaining our defence cooperation program. And there were things that had to be managed at that time. There were perceptions that some of our materiel, equipment, helicopters and things were being used by PNG Defence Force in this conflict against the Bougainvillians. And so there's some Bougainvillians who still think that we were kind of on one side in that situation. I think the government of the day did their best to manage those things.
Many key figures in Papua New Guinea's government and military have expressed their concern over the pact, saying it damages the sovereignty of the nation. What could the pact entail to ensure that it's not hindered?
I think people are talking at the moment without a lot of knowledge about what the pact actually says. And yes, absolutely, Papua New Guinea is a robust democracy and there were people who will be questioning this and that, just as there were all sorts of questions asked at the time that the United States sealed a status of forces agreement with Papua New Guinea, you know, in recent years. There's a bit of selectivity happening here, and I think the media is finding people who have something different to say about the agreement, and that's being telegraphed a little bit in public narrative. But generally speaking, I think that we can celebrate the fact that PNG is still a democracy. It is still a place where people can have different views and express them clearly and openly in public about their own government's approach, something that is outstanding about Papua New Guinea, and sign that the values and approach in PNG is still very closely aligned with that of Australia, and that some of those concerns in the region about Chinese influence and its effect on freedom of expression have not been realised in PNG.
Ian Kemish from the University of Queensland there, and also a former High Commissioner to Papua New Guinea, speaking there with James Bale.